Hey, working moms, let's talk about being over-prepared. Now, what I teach the ambitious working moms that I work with is what I call the 75-25 rule. That's 75% being prepared and 25% being in self-trust. Now, when you learn how to be less prepared and to trust yourself more, you're going to free up time and energy to focus on other priorities, which is necessary when you have a demanding job and an ambitious life where there's so many things competing for your time and your energy. I have found that being more prepared than 75% is just simply not worth your time and energy. I mean, sure, you might gain a little bit of confidence or a little bit more knowledge, but in almost every situation, 75% is enough. In today's episode, I'm teaching you all about the 75-25 rule and exactly what it takes to live by it. This episode is all about learning how to take back your time and your energy. You ready? Let's get to it. Welcome to the Ambitious and Balanced Working Mom Podcast, the place for women who want to balance their ambitious career goals with their life as a mom. If you're looking to feel more confident, decisive, and productive at both work and home, then this is the place for you. I'm your host, Rebecca Olson. Let's get to it. All right, working moms. Hello. I hope you are off to a good week. Hey, real quick, if you have not checked out my short YouTube video on three tips on how to have a smoother, connected morning, I want you to make sure and check that out because I had the most remarkable morning with my kids recently, even though they kind of woke up late on a school day because of the whole time change thing. It easily could have been one of those mornings where we were just rushing and I was pushing my kids out the door, but it wasn't. In fact, I look back at that day and I just smile on how the morning flowed and what I did to help really create fun and connection instead of these feelings of like, go, 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 rush, 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 come on, come on, come on, come on. So make sure you head over to my YouTube channel. That's Rebecca Olson Coaching, if you haven't already, and watch that episode. And while you're there, make sure that you subscribe so you can see all of the videos that I will be posting on YouTube, as well as the podcast episodes as they drop as well. Okay, so let's dive into today's topic. Now, I call this the 75-25 rule. Here's what I mean by this. Generally speaking, and do hear me when I say generally, this is not a universal rule by any means. Certainly, circumstances should be taken into account. But generally speaking, your goal should be to be 75% prepared. 75% prepared for meetings. 75% prepared for conversations, 75% prepared for presentations, 75% prepared as you go into conversations with clients or team members or your boss. What I teach is that you need to aim to be 75% prepared and no more. That's actually the hardest part because most of the ambitious women that I work with, their behavior demonstrates that they're actually trying to be more like 95-ish percent prepared. But I want you to get to 75% prepared and stop. Here's why. Simple math. The cost-benefit analysis of getting you any more prepared than 75% does not make sense. It does not tip the scale, if you will, in your favor. The time and energy it takes to get more than 75% prepared means that you're taking away time and energy from other priorities. And what you gain from moving the needle from 75% to even, let's say, 90%, that extra 15% simply isn't worth it. Likely, you don't even need the extra 15% of knowledge and preparation or even confidence. It's just not worth your time. It would be better to spend your time elsewhere. In fact, I want you to take a moment, close your eyes, pause this podcast if you want, and I want you to consider what you would do with your time and your energy if you didn't spend it trying to get yourself more than 75% prepared. Take a moment, really think about that. Maybe you wouldn't log back on at night because that's usually when you take the time to prepare yourself past the 75% mark. And if you weren't logged on at night, then you might take more time to be present and connected to your partner. Or maybe you wouldn't work late in an effort to get more prepared, and so you'd make it home for dinner. Or maybe you'd make it home in enough time to make dinner if that's important to you. Or maybe you'd take 30 minutes to an hour to lock yourself in your office so you didn't have any distractions and you could actually spend the time vision casting. You can actually think about where your department is going, what your team needs. You take the time to zoom out and think about what the company is looking for and how you can help the company meet your goals or their goals. So many women that I talk to, they're at this point in their career, they're like running departments or running teams, and they tell me they need to think big picture, but they can't get themselves out of the weeds, right? They can't prioritize that time. And usually the first thing that they drop in their calendar is any of that time that they've set aside for that. So maybe if you allowed yourself to just be 75% prepared and no more, all of a sudden you'd have time for that. If you're somebody that is constantly in meetings and presentations and workshops and client calls, allowing yourself to only be 75% prepared might actually free up hours during your week. Hours, right? In which case, maybe you'd stick to a 40-hour work week, or maybe during your lunch break, you'd feel more free to go work out or take a walk or go out to lunch with someone. Allowing yourself to be only 75% prepared is one of several strategies in taking back control of your time, which is important in an ambitious and balanced life where you feel in control of your time, your commitments, and how you're using your energy. I teach several more strategies with my clients, but this is a key one. Now, you may be asking, okay, 75%, I got it. What's the 25%? What's the rest? So let me tell you a story. This story has actually been told on this podcast before by one of my clients. Her name was Nicole Anderson. And she talked about this key moment for her several years ago when we were coaching together. And it was this moment that really stood out to her, and it stands out to me too. She had, I think it was a client meeting like on a Monday morning, and it was Friday afternoon, kind of end of day. And she was not as prepared as she wanted to be for that meeting. She's usually someone in that 90, 95, 100% prepared, and she wasn't there. And she had a choice. She could keep working late into the evening on Friday and sacrifice her time with her family, or she could stop and be okay with being about 75% prepared for that meeting. And as she told me this story, she also mentioned how over the weekend, her brain wanted to offer to her, well, just log back on for a couple of hours. It'll be okay. Don't worry about it. It's just a couple of hours. But then once again, that would have taken time away from her family, which she was actively working at not doing, not sacrificing her family time and her personal time for work. So when she came to this next session and she was sharing this with me, the story, we were celebrating how she was able to stop herself at just 75%. And I asked her, what was it that kind of unlocked that for her? What was it that allowed her to do that at this moment? And she said it so simply. I just simply trusted myself, trusted that I had the majority of information that I needed. I trusted that I would have sufficient answers for my clients. I trusted that if I didn't have those answers, that I could find them quickly. I trusted that my job really wasn't on the line here. I trusted that I was still the right person for the job to be leading this meeting with my client. Balanced life is a life where you are consistently operating in being 75% prepared and 25% operating out of self-trust. 75 preparation, 25% self-trust. The 75-25 rule. Now, the problem is, this is not how your brain operates on default. It's constantly wanting you to be more prepared, usually out of fear. To come back to this story with my client, Nicole, what she normally would have done before coaching, she would see that meeting on her calendar for Monday morning and she would think, oh my gosh, I did not prepare enough. I am not going to have all of the answers. They're going to ask me something I don't know. I might look like a fool. I've got to look good in front of this client. I've got to prove myself. I've got to get this right. They're counting on me. As you just listen to those thoughts, how do they make you feel? For me, just saying them, even though they're not even my thoughts, they're my client's thoughts. But even for me, as I say them and as I think about them, this wave of anxiety rises up in my chest. My heart starts to beat a little faster. This cloud of worry kind of forms in my mind. There's all this pressure in this way of thinking. And of course, if those are your thoughts, as you think about this upcoming meeting or presentation or client call or meeting with your boss, I mean, of course, if you're feeling that sense of overwhelm, you're going to want to be more prepared. These thoughts make it feel like there's a lot riding on this one meeting, this one call, this one presentation. You got to get that right. You got to nail it. And again, I don't want to downplay that some of your meetings and conversations might be high stakes, but it's not most of them. It's certainly not all of them. What I find for most of my clients is they spend all of this extra time over preparing because they're feeling all of this anxiety and this worry and this fear of failure in relation to this meeting. And so just to be clear, when I'm talking about over preparation or when I use the word over prepared, I mean that you are past the 75% mark of being prepared where you're sort of not operating from a place of self-trust. So when you're having these thoughts about needing to get this meeting right and feeling like there's a lot riding on it and you don't want to disappoint people and you're feeling anxious and fearful and you're fearing failing and you're fearing kind of missing the mark and feeling inadequate or humiliated, not only do you spend time over preparing in an effort to sort of settle your brain and your fear, but you also likely, you ruminate. You can't let it go. You wake up at night thinking about it, of all the meetings, the presentations, and what other people are thinking about. You worry about them. You wake up thinking about all the things that you haven't done on your to-do list that you haven't gotten done because you've had so many meetings and presentations and things that you have to prepare for or overly prepare for. So you feel exhausted because you're thinking that you need to be 100% prepared for things in order to be successful instead of having this mindset of self-trust, which would allow you to feel more confident. So then you work more hours, so you have less time to spend with your family. But even when you're spending time with your family, you're not feeling very present because you're checking in with your team, you're thinking about the presentation or the meeting, you're so stressed out about it. Over-preparation is not the only thing going on here. Over-preparation has an impact far greater on the rest of your life and oftentimes is very intricate in pulling you away from your family and being present with your family. I know this all sounds pretty bleak and pretty harsh in some ways. Like, come on, Rebecca, is this really a big deal? But that's my point. Yes, it is. Putting in that extra effort to be 90, 95, 100% prepared is stealing your joy. It's taking away from your ability to feel balanced. If you want to have an ambitious and balanced life, you cannot be someone that is overly prepared. There just isn't time for it. You need that time and that energy to be elsewhere. You cannot be consistently operating from a place of stress and anxiety, which is where overpreparedness comes from. I have a client now that had a recent breakthrough on this. And so we were talking about it. It's actually why I wanted to give this talk today is because it sparked it, this conversation that I had with her. And we were talking about how she's been recently able to delegate so much more to her team because she is building trust in them and she's building trust in herself, where she believes that she's good enough even when they fail or if they fail. She's willing in meetings to let her team learn, to take over and to just say, hey, I don't know that answer. Let me talk to my team about that and get right back to you. Her fear is significantly less because her self-trust has been built over the course of our coaching together. And so when I asked her what it was that was really helping her to kind of unlock this for her, where she was able to operate more naturally and easy and delegate and worry less and be less prepared and trust her team more, what was really allowing her to do that? She said, I've already proven myself in such a way that I've achieved what I've achieved and I don't need to prove myself any longer. This one meeting isn't going to make or break anything in my career, but consistently missing out on my son's life, that is something I'll regret. It's her confidence. It's her ability to believe and trust in herself and what she knows and her value that she brings to her company. That is what is at the heart of allowing herself to stop putting so much energy and time into being overprepared. So much of the work that she and I have done in coaching has helped her to name her value, not just for her company, but as a human being, to stop putting so much weight in her job and to prove her worthiness and her value and her identity as a person. A balanced person knows their value and their worth. They know it, they can name it, and their behavior shows that they don't need to prove it. So I want to circle back to this thought that she had, that she mentioned to me, because I think it's really intricate. It's kind of embedded in this conversation about being overly prepared. And it's this thought that brings up a lot of fear for people and causes them to be overprepared. And that thought is, I don't know. It's something that so many women fear being the truth, not knowing. And then being up in front of a meeting or a presentation or somebody asking a question, and you have to say, I don't know. I would imagine for some of you that just like a whole wave of anxiety just wells up just thinking about being in that situation where you don't actually know and you have to say that. When you fear not knowing and you fear the implications of not knowing, meaning what other people are going to think if you were to say that you don't know, that causes a whole lot of internal turmoil and anxiety and not enoughness for so many women, and it leads them to always want to be prepared. So they never are faced in a situation where they don't know and they have to say that. But I don't know doesn't have to be a thought that you fear. It's not a bad thing to not know. In fact, at your level in your career, likely you're being asked to not know everything. You're being asked to get out of the weeds of the work, of actually doing the work and becoming more of an expert in your department, in your one subject, in your one aspect of business, in your one initiative moving forward. Your boss actually wants you to move forward towards one thing, not everything. Inevitably, that means that you're not going to know. Certainly, you're not going to know everything that's going on with other people or outside your department and team and their initiatives. But even then, if you've done your job well as a leader or a manager, you're not going to know the intricacies of what your team is doing because you're not micromanaging them. You trust them to do your job. So sometimes you're going to have to ask them. Sometimes you're going to have to check in with the people that are actually doing the work, since you are the person casting vision over the work, not in the weeds of the work. I don't know means you're not actually prioritizing everything. You're focusing on just a few things. You're making conscious decisions about where to put your time, where to put your energy, where to put your preparedness, if you will, because you simply can't do it all, which means you're not going to know it all. And that's not a bad thing. At the end of this client session with my client recently, she told me how she admired some of her colleagues that are at her level, like her peers, that simply seem naturally able to say, you know, I don't know, but let me ask my team. She admired that because they said it with such confidence. Like she just trusted her team. Like her colleague knew what her job was and she knew what her team's job was and she wasn't micromanaging them. And so she just needed to go ask whatever the answer was. It's powerful. It's so powerful to not fear not knowing, which is at the heart of so much of wanting to be overly prepared. So the first tip that I want to offer to you, if you want to go about creating a 75-25 life, which I 100% believe is at the heart of an ambitious and balanced life and in controlling your time. First tip I want to offer to you is don't worry about not knowing. In fact, I would encourage you to change your frame of mind around the statement of I don't know. Instead of seeing it as a negative, I want you to turn it into a positive. I gave you a couple of examples of why I think it's a positive and how I don't think it's a bad thing, but I need you to come up with it yourself. I want you to sit down, pen and paper, or talk to your boss or a colleague about why it's okay to not know and why it's okay to speak up and say that in a meeting. What are all the positive things about that? How are you already on board with the idea that it's okay to say, I don't know? I want you to spend time actually diving into that. The second tip I have to you in creating a 75-25 life is to come up with exactly what you would say in a meeting if you were asked or questioned in a way that you weren't prepared for, right? Essentially, in that moment when you're going to have to say, you know, I don't know, what are some ways that you can respond? And maybe just saying, I don't know, is okay for you. And for some of you, you might want to say that in a little bit of a different way, but your brain needs to know that you have some options, some really good, creative, powerful, strong, confident ways of saying that. So this is the moment when your brain is really fearing being asked a question or being given an idea of some kind that you haven't fully formed and you don't have all of the information for. And there's a whole bunch of fear in that moment. What I want you to do is prepare for that ahead of time. Preemptively think about it, meaning come up with a plan ahead of time so that your brain sees that you have some options. There isn't then going to be so much fear if your brain sees that there's really confident and powerful ways to kind of navigate that moment. Now, that doesn't mean that, of course, that you aren't going to have some fear and anxiety if that happens, but you're not going to feel so paralyzed and you're not going to fear kind of feeling like a fool. So how are you going to respond? Here's a couple of examples. Huh, that's an interesting point. Let me think about that and get back to you. That's something that my team handles. Let me talk to them about it and I'll send you an email. Oh, I love that idea. Can you tell me more? We're working out those details right now, but at our next meeting, I promise that I will make a point to present on those. I'm just making these things up. You have to come up with your own ideas that make sense within the context of where you are so you can feel prepared for your own types of meetings and conversations you might have. But what are the exact words? What are some options, at least, of words that you can say in this moment? So that's tip number two, is to prepare your mind for that. And then the third tip, probably the most important of all of these, is to focus on building up, bolstering, if you will, your self-trust. That's 25% of this equation. So let me break that down for you real fast. I said this before, but I want to say it again in maybe a little bit of a different way so it really sinks in. Self-trust means trusting in yourself. And when you think about putting your trust in something, what you're doing is that you're allowing yourself to feel safe with whatever that thing is or whatever that person is or that idea. It's about building safety or trust within you. We often use those terms interchangeably in this case. So a self-trusting person feels safe within themselves. They don't beat themselves up when something goes wrong or when they don't know something. There's no shame, blame, guilt cycle going on that happens when you miss the mark or when someone's disappointed in you. There's just a high level of self-trust. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not sad or disappointed or bummed or even frustrated or angry with yourself when things don't go the way you want them to go. It just means that you're not shaming yourself. You're not telling yourself, oh, you should have known better. You're better than this. You shouldn't be in this position. Other people would have done better than you. You don't deserve this. That's shame and blame. And a self-trusting person does not go there. Disappointment, after you've kind of missed the mark or you didn't quite nail the presentation in the way you wanted to, or you didn't get to the results you wanted, or that conversation just didn't flow the way you wanted. Disappointment sounds more like, oh, sucks that that happened. I know I could do better than this. Let me figure out how. One of the aspects of building self-trust within you is ending that beat-up cycle, the shame-blame cycle, just never allowing yourself to go there. Now, I know that can be difficult to do on your own. A lot of women that come to me, they don't even realize they're doing that. Not only do they not realize that they're doing it, they don't even realize it's optional, that they don't have to go to this place of shame and blame. They could feel disappointment, but they don't have to make it mean anything about them personally. That's where the shame comes in. And it's one of the reasons why coaching is so effective. I'm an outsider looking in at your life, providing that insight. And over the last 6-7 years that I've been working with working moms, I've at this point coached over 300 working moms individually. I know exactly what that shame blame cycle looks like. We don't have to take time to uncover it or unpack it. I see it, I name it, I give you the tools to get yourself out of it quick. So tip number three is to build up, to bolster your self-trust. And one of the ways you do that is you stop shaming and blaming yourself. Now, another way to do that is to spend time every single day thinking about how amazing you are. Thinking about your value, thinking about how amazing you are at your company. Now, I know for many of us that can feel very boastful and that feels really uncomfortable. In fact, we were likely taught to not speak about ourselves in that way and to have some more humility within us. In fact, it's probably not ladylike. That's another way we might say that. And I want to just call us out on that. I want my daughter to think very highly of herself. That's confidence. When you're thinking highly of yourself, you're feeling really confident in yourself. You would never tell your daughter to not think highly of herself, to not speak highly of herself. When you're thinking amazing and wonderful and valuable things about yourself, you live a life that is more confident. You prioritize yourself and your desires and your dreams. You're willing to say yes. You're willing to say no in a much more curated thing. You go after big things in your life, right? It all stems from you believing and trusting in yourself at a deep down level. Everyone has access to those thoughts. Some are just more practiced than others. They're just willing to feel the uncomfortable feeling of thinking really positive things about you. Now, I give my clients a daily exercise that includes this, where every single day they are writing out impactful and valuable thoughts about themselves. Every single one of my clients gets this exercise and they start doing it on a daily basis. It doesn't take more than 10 minutes. And then I promise you, every single client comes back to me, usually after 2 or 3 weeks of doing this, where they say, man, this exercise is really working. I feel so much better about myself. I feel so much more confident. Yes, that's why I give this exercise. That's what it's all about. You believing in you, you believing in your value, your impact. That is at the heart of self-trust. When it comes to preparation, 25% of it should be just that. For some of my clients, I assign them the homework of actually spending the same amount of time they would usually spend preparing, maybe just for like a week or two. I don't want them to do this for very long, but I want them to spend the same amount of time they usually would preparing, but instead of spending the whole time preparing their knowledge and getting their slide deck ready or whatever, only spending 75% of their time doing that. And the other 25% of the time is about preparing themselves. It's intentionally thinking thoughts about how they're the best person to lead this meeting and why they're so valuable to their team, to their company, how they're deserving of their job. Literally, I want them to spend time writing those thoughts out. I want your brain to see that preparing your mind and your confidence is just as important as preparing your knowledge. Here's the last thing I want to leave you with as we close talking about the 75-25 rule and why you need to stop being so overprepared for things. Everyone has an example of how to do this. Everybody actually has done this in the past. We have examples. I like to go back to the college days because I think that's easy for us to all remember, but I know all of you have examples of this at work. In college, it was when you had like a paper or a project due. At work, it's like when you have a meeting or a deadline of some kind coming up and you have a fixed amount of time to complete it, either just because it's a last minute deadline or because you've been procrastinating so long, now you only have a certain amount of time to get to it. But regardless, when you have a fixed amount of time to do something, you give yourself naturally, you give yourself less time to prepare. If I go back to my client, Nicole, it was a Friday, end of day, and she looked ahead, she saw this Monday morning meeting. She had a very fixed amount of time to prepare before she left work that day. We'll just say it was a couple of hours. And when you have a deadline and that fixed amount of time to get something done, you have no choice but to just allow yourself to be 75% prepared and 25% not. There just simply isn't time to research more, to analyze more, to get other people's opinions, to go back and forth about things, right? If you think back to college, it's like 1 a.m. and you're trying to get this paper finally done so you could turn it in first thing in the morning. There just isn't time to do anything more and to worry about getting it right and to go back and forth with the words. And you just have to like say something, write it down, and be done with it. And usually, most of us, that was really effective. We did really well under that type of pressure where you just have to make a decision and trust that it's good enough. It's the same concept as we talk about being prepared. You only have to give yourself 75% time, essentially, to prepare yourself to have the answers. Learning to trust yourself, to not overprepare, to not be a procrastinator, which just sucks away your time and your energy. Learning to be in control of your energy, your commitments, and the way you spend your time and how much you work and when you work and when you don't. That is exactly what we do in coaching together. The investment to achieve that goal over the course of 6 months is $8,000 if we work together. And there's some payment plans available to you. But I want to take a moment and I want you to think about if you believed in yourself in a higher level, if you increased your confidence, if you stopped procrastinating, if you stopped caring so much about what other people think and needing to know every little thing and be prepared, if you ended all of that overworking, out of balance, burnout behavior, what would happen? Because that is what the investment is in. It's not investing in coaching. You're not investing in even ending the procrastination and the people pleasing and the perfection and the overpreparedness. You're investing in the life that will be created when you do that. You're investing in controlling the amount of time that you work so you have headspace and energy to come home and do something adventurous and fun with your kids instead of just sit on the couch like a blob. You're investing in having enough time and energy to actually have a conversation with your partner outside of just the logistics of the day so that as your kids get older and they need less and less of you, you still want to be married to the human that's in front of you. You're investing in being someone that has more ideas and is willing to share those ideas and advocate for those ideas, which likely means you're going to be noticed and seen more and promoted faster. You're invested in having a life where you spend money on you and you spend time on you because you're worth it. And when you believe you're worth it and you start spending money and time on you, you teach your kids to do the same thing. Yes, as your coach, I am helping you end the cycles of being overprepared and the shame and blame and the procrastination and the feeling overwhelmed and burnout. I can guarantee you that we will do that. But your investment is so much more than that. You're investing in a life where you don't look back and regret. If you're ready for that regret-free life, let's have a conversation. It starts with a breakthrough call. This is a chance for us to connect over exactly the kind of life that you want, to really cast a vision over that, to talk about exactly what we're going to do and how we're going to get you there in coaching, and then to decide if working together is your right next step. If you're interested in booking that free call, you can just simply go to my website, learn more about the process. It's www.RebeccaOlsonCoaching.com. And of course, I will have that in the show notes as well. All right, working moms, make sure you go to my YouTube channel if you are not here already and subscribe so you can get all of the downloads of this podcast in the future, as well as any of the other videos that I upload to that as well. I am here for you. I'm here to support you, and I can't wait to help you get to the regret-free life that you want. All right, working moms, until next week, let's get to it. Hey, before you go, I want to take a moment and tell you about an opportunity to speak with me directly. If you've been listening to this podcast and still feel like you need help balancing a fulfilling career with motherhood, then I encourage you to schedule a free breakthrough call. On this call, We will get crystal clear on exactly what it is you want out of your career and how you want to balance that with motherhood. And then we'll craft next steps for you to start moving toward a more calm and fulfilling working mom life. Head over to www.RebeccaOlsonCoaching.com/book to apply for this free call. Till next week, and working moms, let's get to it.